Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Ginder of FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at WILLAG.org. Well, let's start with this question. And Chip, really, it's only for you up front because you've been traveling on the Farm Journal Midwest Crop Tour from Ohio all the way, I think, through Minnesota at this point. Is that right?
That is right. Just hit Rochester, Minnesota, and on our way back right now, back towards home. But just completed 4 days of the tour.
And what did you see, and what were you impressed by, and what were you thinking? Hey, wait a second! I didn't know that. That looked so bad.
There was some of all of that. To be quite honest with you, and it's I think some of it is just a perception versus reality issue. So I guess starting in the east. Just supremely immature crops, as a general rule, in Ohio and Indiana. Yields were not great. Pod counts, not great, at least on my route. I think a couple things that hit me, we came across Rensselaer, Indiana, cross route 24. That corn crop is not very good. I'm wondering, where's all the good corn. We got to have some good corn acres to, hold Illinois up at a strong yield. Kind of got a surprise. Western Illinois, very good. I would say that. Got better rain, obviously. We crossed the river at Keokuk, Iowa. Came up through southeast Iowa, Washington, Mount Pleasant, and then up to Iowa City. And I hadn't been through that way, but people had, been saying how dry it was. And it was dry. We had a farmer in the car with me. He said, this isn't so bad. And I kind of thought the same thing. About a 160 to 170 corn. But as you look at that route and the averages they put out, that was like 24 bushels below last year. So, again, it was okay corn. But it was certainly a far cry from a year ago. We did run into some much better corn, as we got into today, and that is basically from Iowa City north. As you would expect, that was the wettest area of Iowa, and they had better rainfall, better conditions all year. My particular route, it was some good. We had a couple over 200, but there was also some pretty average corn there too. So, all told, I don't know. I'm kind of telling people I'm maybe more confused than when I started. I guess the thing that hits me, and I'm a outlier by far in this, is I don't know where all the corn is that's going to hold the strong averages together in Iowa and Illinois. There's huge variability. And, there's good corn out there. Don't get me wrong. There's some very good corn. Probably some corn is good or better than last year. I just don't know if there's enough of it to hold the averages together.
So at the time of this taping, we do not have the Iowa and Minnesota numbers, though they will be released on Thursday evening by the folks at Farm Journal. The Illinois number is at 180.7. That compares to the USDA figure of 188. And to go through some of the rest of the numbers, the Farm Journal folks, and you were part of this eastern leg, so in Indiana, put that crop at 173 bushels to the acre. Or actually, that's the USDA number, and the Farm Journal number was 171.23. And the Nebraska crop at 165.42, and USDA at 183. Ohio at 164.62, and USDA at 171 in August. South Dakota at 147.9, and USDA at 140. And let me catch that Illinois number again. It's actually 180.7 again. That's 180.7 and USDA at 188. So I suspect, Brian Stark, and I think you've told me this before, that what you've heard from the Andersons was that Indiana and Ohio, really highly variable. You didn't think the crop was particularly good there, though you had not been through it. Were you surprised that the folks on the tour found 171.23, that they weren't really very far off the USDA number?
Yeah, I think I am surprised. I think given some of the things that we've seen all through the growing season in Indiana, both on the west central part of the state to the east central part of the state, and what we've seen driving across and having our physical assets over there, it's hard for me to fathom and confirm that the yields are that promising, given what we've seen and some of the stresses have gone through from the grower's perspective, just being out amongst the field. So it was a big surprise. I think the USDA coming out with a yield very similar to last year in August for Indiana was a surprise as well. So I guess we'll find out here soon enough as we move forward, but that was a huge surprise. And I think obviously the 180-ish number in Illinois, speaking in my backyard, I think is pretty comparable to what me and some of my grain buyers and everyone have been talking. We thought that given some of the initial challenges and just based on some of the surveys conducted in the Champaign County, Vermilion County, Piatt County area, that the state, you know, is probably going to be down 10 to 15% as a whole. And I think 178 to 180 is probably pretty accurate. So I think given the pro farmers' findings, I tend to not be surprised by them in Illinois, but Indiana certainly was a surprise.
A couple of other notes. Of course, Farm Journal makes this trip across on these Midwest crop tours each and every year. They don't go into every county in most of the states. In fact, the only state that they go into every county so that they have a pretty good accounting of it is in Iowa. So I think there are 99 counties there, and they are into all of those counties. You can see those numbers again up on our website at willag.org. And on Friday afternoon, the numbers adjusted by ProFarmer actually come out, and they give an official number for the, not the tour, but the pro farmer as to what they believe the crop looks like. Okay, so you've been listening to some of this, Greg Ginder, and I know you've been watching the Twitter feeds and seeing the numbers as they come out. How's it been impacting Chicago this week?
Well, we've definitely seen a fall off since the report, and I think that goes without saying. What I've been noticing more than anything is, as the days go by and the ranges get smaller and smaller, it looks like some form of, I don't know if you want to call it hope or disbelief, has kind of taken a hold of the market. We're seeing less and less sellers coming into the market. Positions are starting to square up a little bit. One thing that I found interesting with regards to the report for August versus September is we did a little weighted average research, and the September report over 25 years has a tendency to be a lowering of the yields both on corn and beans from the August report. Now, where we go from there is kind of a mixed bag, but generally speaking, you do kind of see a reduction across the September report versus the August.
Hey, Chip, in your car, did you talk very much about marketing with the farmer and the rest of the folks that were there and where they stand today, what things you think they might be able to do to help themselves out as we get ready for the harvest season?
Well, no, not a lot. Just a general sense of, which isn't a shock. There's a lot of old crop corn left. That's, I think, part of the reason, the market's slumping a little bit. Call it a week from tomorrow is first notice day on September futures. If you remember back to July, there's a lot of basis contracts. The decision time's coming up. Do I roll them? Do I just price them? And we bottomed this market, I believe on first notice day of the July contract. So, we could be getting close. I'm not saying that's the start of a dollar rally, but we could be getting close to some support and then maybe some evening up and a short covering bounce into the September crop report.
On that note, Brian Stark, producers who have corn in your elevator will have to make a decision at some point as to whether they carry it over. When does that need to be done? for your system, and have producers begun to make that decision?
They have. New effective fall rates generally start every year around September 1st, and that's the case this year as well. And just to highlight one of Chip's points, last year at this time, the December 16 contract made its contract low on August 31st, coincidentally, first notice day for the September futures contract. So I think that's been the tough call. We've had some people that have just kind of thrown in the towel. I think there'll be others that will play the basis contract game and stop the DP charges that way before they start to accrue, and hope that this is a intermediate low that we rally. But on the flip side, from a risk management perspective, I think that the growers that are challenged and feeling a little extra salty right now, given maybe some less than desired yields, as well as a big drop in price, I think also have something to consider, that if we are potentially setting in our low, that you could be taking away potential insurance indemnity if we do rally here, the subsequent reports in September, October, right when we're determining our crop insurance average this fall. So one of the things I've encouraged them to think about doing is potentially looking at some upside protection to protect that indemnity that they could potentially lose if the market does rally into October and takes them out of that price trigger point.
Do you think that's more important for the corn or the soybeans?
I think right now from a corn perspective, because, you know, if you have an 85% RP policy, your December futures low is around 336, and we're within 20 cents of that today. And so for corn, I think that's what they have to monitor, because the beans, at least in our area, I don't think are necessarily as detrimental yield-wise. You can't tell today because rains have come through and can certainly still help that crop. But we've seen pretty consistent yield checks at 10 to 15% below last year, and even close to APH numbers for corn. And I think that's where you start to think about that price point of an insurance claim. And if we do truly set our low now and rally into October, we could be taken out of that potential claim situation for those growers, specific growers that are been hurt by yields. So
let's turn our attention to some of the other fundamentals. You're there in St. Louis or near St. Louis, and the export market. How's demand for both crops at this time, Greg?
Well, the sales report came out today. It looked really friendly. Beans beat estimations by about 30 million bushels, which was really surprising, even though we had about 17 to 20 million old crop roll into new. So it was a good day on the bean side of things. Corn looked really good too, beat expectations. We're online to meet the expectations on the old crop, so I don't expect a whole lot of deviation in the usage category on the balance sheet for old crop. You know, new crop bean sales could certainly use a little push. The Chinese have been basically buying out of Brazil, given the massive crop that was down there over the last growing season. So we could definitely see a pickup in sales there. That would definitely be helpful. Right now, everybody's just kind of waiting to see when the Chinese come in and buy more of the P&W soybeans right now, because they have been a little bit slow in doing so.
Chip Nellinger, do you think that this is for corn, maybe for soybeans, for different fundamental reasons, I suppose, a big crop getting smaller, and are there things that you know that you want to do if that's the case?
Oh, well, I think exactly what was said before is, you know, take a look at crop insurance. Do I think it's a big crop getting smaller? That's a trick question. I'm not so sure I was ever in the camp that it was as big as what they're telling us to begin with. But I do think it's shrinking. I do think it's shrinking. Beans are just really hard to tell. You know, we just need more time, and there's so many immature beans that are just have no fill to them yet. And that was one thing that jumped out at me as well. If we don't get some rain, and probably more importantly, a little bit of heat, you could have pod weights way, way down, and that could be a big detrimental pull on bean yield. So the jury's still out on beans. I just think it's too early to tell there, but they've got an uphill battle in some areas. So it probably was never in the camp, you know, that we trend line yields to begin with, even from the day we planted based on the conditions we had.
You know, the one thing I didn't hear when I was talking to folks that were on the tour, and there were four of you or five of you that I talked to, I think, over the time was, and I didn't ask this question, was at this, particularly the folks on the western leg, if they were impressed by the number of soybean acres that they had seen. I know I certainly was when I made a trip in July to North Dakota on the western, on the southern route headed that way, that there were just an inordinate number of bean acres. And we know USDA says there are, what, nearly 90 million of them. Does that make any difference, Chip, in the way you think about beans?
Well, I didn't talk to anybody from the western leg, and that really never came up in the talks. There were a few pockets here and there, particularly.
Well, that's what I mean. I didn't hear that from anybody, yeah. And it surprised us. And when I think about it, I think it surprises me.
As I think back, there were a couple little pockets, one in Ohio, one, you know, kind of the Iowa-Minnesota border where, you know, we pulled off and, you know, we're instructed to every 15 miles, 15 to 20 miles, just pull off randomly, find a cornfield, bean field together. A couple pockets of, you know, that northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, and Ohio that you had to drive a while to find a cornfield. So, yeah, there's some of that out there, but it would just definitely did not jump out to me like, oh, wow, there's just a ton more bean acres out there. It's hard to tell as you cross the country. I don't think we're going to know that till January anyway, most likely. But I think yield's going to be more of a determinant than acres at this point.
On beans, even?
Well, yeah, I think so. I just have a hard time putting, you know, in the way of trying to even guess what the USDA is going to do. I know there's a lot of debate out there that, you know, total acres, maybe even corn acres could increase and bean acres maybe significantly. But I don't know. Historically, it just seems like we don't get major, major revisions. Could they add a half a million to beans, maybe, but, you know, again, a bushel or two swing either way is going to swallow that up pretty quickly.
I guess I wasn't thinking about the increases in beans, Chip, and maybe somebody else can jump out there. I was just thinking that fundamentally there are a whole lot of bean acres, and yield can change things some, but when we've got such a large carry out for this year and enough acres coming into next year, how much can it really change the bean market? And maybe I'm just chasing a different function that I shouldn't be. And I don't know, Brian, what do you think?
Well, no, I understand where you're coming from. I think the key component, too, that has to be thrown into the equation on acres yield, but also the demand base. And I think the fact that the Gulf market's been firm much longer than we've anticipated for beans export this year, that, you know, we've got current sales on the books that are about 80 million bushels above. Now, we saw China cancel some today, but, you know, they still have 80 million above and beyond the current USDA estimate. So our carryouts easily going to be smaller going into SEP 1, and obviously that strong demand base will help absorb the additional acres and potential yield that's yet to be determined. So that's the one thing that we see, at least now, that's different from the corn market, is that the bean demand has been very good, continues to be very good, and corn obviously has the weight over its head with a 2.3 billion carryout, that even if the yield drops into the 164, 165 area, we're still going to be sitting around a 2 billion projected carryout, and that's going to limit our upside potential in corn.
On the soybeans in demand, is there a good reason? I mean, we've looked at it in previous years when maybe they've had a short crop and they haven't and they haven't really switched to Brazil or Argentina, and Argentina is mostly bean meal. But is there a reason that you think demand out of the United States has remained strong?
I think the surprisingly, the South American farmer has held on to his grain very tightly. Now, there's been talk that at some point he's going to need cash this fall, which we could be robbing Peter to pay Paul with the better demand, more expected demand in this current crop season that we saw may end up hurting or hindering some of our strong demand we normally see September, October, November, December to China this fall when they let loose of some of those beans, and maybe we end up catching up to that later on. But I think the main reason is the fact that he uses a hedge against inflation. It's a currency play, and I think at some point, though, just like our farmer, the United States farmer, has to deal with, they have to generate cash. And I think that those beans will come to market at some stage of the game, and they'll be a cheaper competitive force for the United States from a demand perspective.
Anything to add on this subject matter, Greg Ginder?
Well, I think the interesting thing is going to be the weather that comes through the Gulf right now. I mean, talking to majority of the people that that I have down in the Delta and the Southern Illinois areas, I mean, they are really hoping that they get some decent rains, inch or more, the early part of next week. So I think that rain, depending on how much and where, will pretty much make the beans that are going to get those rains. I think the corn, for the most part, is pretty much a foregone conclusion, for good or worse. It's pretty much done.
On one other topic related to acreage, is there any thought from anybody that the acreage in the South has been productive or appears to be productive enough this year that it will add up to enough to make a difference in either the corn or the soybean market?
Well, it's surely got some great corn yields right now. Some reports south of Memphis are talking about 200 bushel corn coming out of the Mississippi area along the river. The beans are still yet to be determined, but some of these corn yields that are being seen, even dry bushels, are really good. And now, on the scale of things, they're a much smaller percentage, but you know, every bushel counts, and they've got some fantastic yields down there.
No, this was something that I won't take credit for this. Todd Hubbs asked me about, or was talking to me about it earlier in this week. And he hasn't done work with it. He just made note out of the USDA August numbers when you start to look at the yields from across the United States, that those southern states actually, while they don't produce a lot, in individual states had high yields. And when you pile them up, that might make some bit of a difference. And then the question becomes, where does it go? I assume part to the southeast, maybe. Maybe you've been thinking about this at all, Brian. That would be in direct competition, I suppose, with one of your marketplaces.
Sure, it could be both. Could some be the Gulf of Mexico, some to the southeast? I think certainly that's got a implication, but obviously the job of the corn market is to move the supply where it is to where it isn't from a demand perspective, and it generally functions very well. So if we're shortchanged up in Iowa and Indiana and Illinois, then some of the southern states might be able to cover. I myself don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I myself am skeptical, as good as the Deep South is, and maybe the Delta, that it's going to be enough to offset some of the higher producing production that we've lost in the three I states. And that's just my own opinion.
Yeah, just something to discuss and to think about, and to see what we thought might be there and available. So, Greg Ginder, tell me where you put your assessment of the corn price at this point.
Well, believe it or not, I mean, obviously it's the lowest that we've seen it in this calendar year, and I'm one of those people who have kind of been waiting to see this thing kind of bottom out a little bit, or at least show us a harvest low. Now, will it trade sideways from here about 25 cents higher and then back down 25 cents? That's yet to be seen. But I mean, I am friendly at these prices. I think they are relatively cheap. I think they are, I think we need to make our way up the ladder here a little bit. Unfortunately, corn has a tendency to take the elevator down and the stairs up. So it may take us a little while here to show, you know, gains week on week. But as we start to see this thing start to, you know, consolidate a little bit, and the buyers start to show up a little bit in the mornings, you know, and we take some gains home, you know, a little bit every day, I'm expecting to see these markets turn around. I'm not gonna put my stamp on $4 corn anytime soon, but I certainly think that we should see some gains here going into the September report, and I would like to see some continued gains after. But I would think that somebody would want to take advantage of those prices, at least for this calendar year, maybe selling some December contracts, you know, corn, some bins, things like that, to try to take advantage of any rise we might get in the price.
Brian Stark, your assessment of price for corn?
I think pretty much on par with Greg's. I'm pretty friendly to price from where we are today. We're in new low territory. It doesn't feel like the corn market at some point is going to get much cheaper with some uncertainty with the size of the crop. I fully expect that. I don't know how big the rally is going to be given the carry-in we're taking on, but certainly I think from these prices, I would think we have some upside potential.
And Chip Nellinger, we're going to wrap things up here. Three questions for you. Your assessment on price on corn. Tell me about what you saw in Minnesota, because I haven't heard that yet. And then any final word you have for us?
Well, I would say as far as price goes, I think that you could be close to some lows here in corn. Potential going forward really is up to the final crop size. I think it's entirely realistic to think we could get back north of $4, but it may take into winter and spring time frame, maybe against the March contract, somewhere back north of $4 pretty easily. I'm in the camp that, you know, we're going to be closer to 160 than 170 in the end result. I guess as a final word, you know, now's not the time to panic for sure on corn, particularly if you're in an area that maybe was, you know, average at best or below APH yields because of weather conditions. You know, you're likely into a crop insurance position here. So, you know, again, I don't think it's time to panic. If you do have to make some sales or some fall sales, I think you need to have some ownership, you know, for post-harvest.
And what did you see in Minnesota?
Minnesota, we just had we had a kind of a split route today. We had four stops in Iowa, four stops in Minnesota, basically just straight south of Rochester. It's kind of a mixed bag. We saw good population, but the ear length wasn't great, and the yields weren't as good as what I thought. Walking into the fields, I thought they would be you know, well north of 200, and we saw a lot of, you know, 170 to 185 corn there.
Brian Stark, your final word for the day?
I think the main thing, just like I highlighted earlier in the call, is just to remind them if you're in an area where you might have yields hurt and it feels like we might be setting up a low, to look at some upside protection to protect your insurance indemnity.
And finally, Greg Ginder.
Well, I think patience is the key. I know nobody likes looking at the prices that we have right now, but I don't think there's any real rush to run out and you know, sell this market for fear of worse. So I would just say patience and keep your eyes on the basis.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always hear the whole of our program online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Greg Ginder of FC Stone. He's in Chesterfield, Missouri. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.